Morning, Ms. Wright.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Lisa Wright representing Mr. Patrick David. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. This is an appeal from a denial of a motion for reduction of sentence due to a retroactive change in the sentencing guidelines under 3582C2. This Court should remand for reconsideration of Mr. David's motion because the District Court failed to, quote, determine the amended guideline range, unquote, as mandated by Section 1B1.10 of the guidelines. Although the District Court acknowledged that it, quote, must determine the amended guideline range, unquote, nowhere in the memorandum opinion did the District Court do so. This Court can't review the District Court's guideline calculation if the District Court doesn't say what that calculation was. If the guideline range had been undisputed, perhaps the Court's failure to explicitly state it on the record would be harmless. But there was, because there would be no likelihood that the District Court had used the wrong starting point for its reduction analysis. But here there was a dispute as to where the District Court should begin its reduction analysis and how much reduction was authorized.
Between whom and whom?
Well, Mr. David took the position that the correct range was 151 to 188.
Yeah.
Probation in a memorandum.
But the parties are the government and the defendant, right?
Maybe the word isn't dispute, but disagreement, different recommendations to the court or different positions.
The parties before the court were in complete agreement.
I'm
not sure that parties has legal significance here,
right.
But it is a sort of standard legal term.
Well, actually, the government didn't take a position, though, really. But they did point out that the correct original range had been 34. They didn't say what range the court should use. They just didn't give a range at all, but they dropped a footnote saying that the correct range originally had been 34, which, given the addition of the gun bump and the minus of 2 points, would make the correct range now 34 also. They did not say the court should use 34, but they did say that was the correct range. And I think that the court did cite the applicable language, but it could have interpreted it, the requirement that it determine the amended range. The court might well have concluded that the, quote, amended range that would have been applicable to the defendant if the amendment had been in effect, unquote, was the correct range. That was a reasonable interpretation before Dillon, and that the one-level windfall was not a, quote, guideline application decision that it was required to, quote, leave unaffected under 1B1.10. So it's very possible here that the district court, interpreting 1B1.10, which it properly quoted, but interpreting it differently than Dillon did, thought that probation was correct. And indeed, probation was the sort of neutral arm of the court that had been tasked with providing these memos in every one of these cases, and had a standard form that they used and tell the court what the new amended range was. And their position was it was 168 to 110, and it appears there's a very good possibility that that's what the court concluded, although we don't know. For this reason, the procedural error in not resolving the dispute over the amended guideline range has not been shown to be harmless, and the court might well have thought.
So under 3582, what the district court is tasked with the they're trying to decide whether to reduce the sentence, right? Mm-hmm. And Judge Lambert said, I'm not going to reduce the sentence. You say, well, he should have first said the range now is 151 to 188 and then said, I'm not going to reduce it.
That's right. That's what Dillon says, that you have to know what your authorized reduction or starting point is in order to know what the balance
what
is.
What would be the point? He went through the 3553 factors, decided the sentence shouldn't be reduced. He was aware of everything you're telling us today. He didn't explicitly state it. But what would be the point of us sending us back and say, hey, put another sentence in your...
Well, he may have used, if he used 168 to 210, that is a guideline factor. 3553A4 is the guideline range. So if the guideline range changes, the 3553 analysis changes. So he did, in fact, not do the correct 3553 analysis if he used
the sentence that he imposed falls within the guideline range.
That's right. Correct, but I don't
think... Either the correct or the incorrect.
That's correct, but I don't think that should...
And he said that's the right sentence, I'm not going to change it, right?
That was in light of...
And he was aware of everything, as far as we know, he's aware of everything you're telling us. We're supposed to presume error from a silence.
No, he's not, we don't know if he's aware of the correct guideline range. We don't know what guideline range he thought. And, you know, if the guideline range had been, if the Sentencing Commission had said, oh my goodness, Mr. David's guideline range has been wrong all this time, it should have been 100 months less. You know, I think that would be, we can't just assume the court would look at that the same way as it does when it thinks there's a 20-month change in the guideline range. It's a different analysis, and here the difference is smaller than that, but still the court should have the opportunity to do what's now required clearly in light of Dillon and wasn't necessarily clear at the time. And the
Counsel, mm-hmm. what's wrong with the what the district judge recited to page 156 of the appendix? The very top of the page, he speaks of the range having been 151 to 188 with criminal history category of 2 and offense level 33. And then at the bottom of that paragraph, this historical recitation, agreed the 2 levels should be added from the original level 33, and then the final paragraph goes down 2 levels. So he seems to clearly understand that the offense level 33 entails 151 to 188, and that 35 is 2 greater than 33, and so when 2 is taken away from 35, we're going to be back down to 33, and therefore right back up at the passage at the top of the page. What? I mean, isn't that sort of just about as precise as one can get?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because what the 2 points did is it didn't say take it off the top. It said we're changing the base offense level to the crack guideline by reducing those 2 levels. So you're sort of rebuilding the guideline range. So he's got, instead of 34, he's now at 32. That's the 2-level reduction. Got to add the gun bump back in. That gets you to 34. The question is, do we add that 1 point back in too, or just subtract, excuse me, that 1 point? And if you're actually trying to say what is the applicable amended guideline range, one would think possibly before Dillon that you look at the guideline book and you calculate the new guideline range. And if you did that, you would get 34, not 33. The only way you get
30. They had the history here, right?
But the question is, do you leave in place that 1 point? And what the guideline says is you leave in place guideline application decisions. And I guess my point is that the judge and probation obviously didn't think that 1-level windfall, the government characterized as a windfall, was a guideline application decision. And it's true, we don't know why Judge Johnson took that 1 point off. But since we don't know, it's kind of hard when you recalculate the guideline range to give him the 1 point under the current amended range. Now,
well,
Dillon,
are you saying now the judge computed it too favorably to your client?
No. I'm saying he might have reasonably thought that he couldn't take that 1 point off when figuring out what the amended range was because he didn't have a guideline basis for doing that, and he wouldn't think it was a, quote, guideline application decision. Dillon now makes clear that sentencing mistakes, the court doesn't have authority to correct sentencing mistakes, so even if it's a mistake, it should have come off. And that's what was unclear at the time. So I don't think this recitation, while accurate, tells us that he understood he was supposed to say 35 minus 2 as opposed to 32 plus 2. And then what do I do with this 1 point when it's, I don't know why it was taken off and there's nothing I can find in the guidelines book to justify it. So, I mean, the government did tell the court that the, quote, correct range did not include that 1 level reduction. And probation obviously thought the same thing. So even to the extent there is some presumption here, I think it's rebutted by probation's recommendation and also this ambiguous language in the guideline range. And I would like also to say,
It is clear that the government consistently did not try to reinsert that 1 to bump up for the mistaken drop down of 1 level. Right.
They just didn't say. I mean, they said there was a 1-level mistake in his favor, but then they don't say whether that mistake is a guideline application decision that should be left alone or whether it's just a mistake that means that his new, amended guideline range that would have been applicable is the correct guideline range that would have been applicable. They just don't say. And so there is conflicting information in front of the court, and the government hasn't really taken a position. I think they say in their brief they didn't take a position.
I'm just looking at the runover footnote from 57 to 58 of the joint appendix. And on page 58, the first three lines there, all then agreed at resentencing that the two-level increase for the dangerous weapon was applicable, but the error in setting the base offense level would accrue to defendant's benefit. So, I mean, that seems to, if the government is urging that that error be corrected, it certainly is doing it in an awfully subtle way.
Well, it is just stating what occurred, and I think that the court's authority on that resentencing to leave that in place was different than its very limited authority, arguably, under, I mean, in fact, Dillon says it really can't do anything except what it says, and the government takes that position as well. Under 3582, the court can only...
By the same token, it doesn't say that the court is supposed to correct all kinds of errors. Well, it's supposed to correct all kinds of errors that are sort of that are embodied in the existing sentence, right? In fact, it seems to me
contrary.
Yeah, it's quite the other way around.
It says we agreed not to correct it last time, but at 3582, the court's jurisdiction is very, very narrow to only look at what the new amended range would be and the applicable range. And I'm saying there.
You now seem to be presenting an argument under which the correct approach for the district judge would be to fix the range in a way that did not give the defendant the benefit of the one-level mistake.
I'm saying that was an interpretation of 1B1.10 that was reasonable before Dillon. Dillon said, even if it's a mistake, you leave it in place. That when we say guideline application decisions, and I mean, this is an odd situation.
Both Judge Williams and I are hearing you seem to be saying that this calculation is too favorable to your client.
That's definitely not what I'm saying. I'm saying that...
What's the point of your discussion of the one-point bump, then? Where do we... What does it lead us to?
Well, the point is that at the time, there's every reason to believe Judge Lamberth thought that the 1 point would not accrue this time because it was not a guideline application decision. It was a mystery point. And he cannot, under 3582, he might think, give the mystery point. So therefore, he applies the range of 168 to 210 when, after Dillon, it's clear, and the government now agrees, it was 151.
Let me put it in, I mean, my attention has been drawn to points in the record that suggest to me that he understood just what he was doing. Can you, and you point to omissions, possibly. Is there anything positive in what the judge said that supports your reading?
Well, he does recite that this was a mistake, I think. He recites it's a mistake. So
everyone agreed on that.
Right. And so we just don't know whether he then thought, oh, it's a mistake, and since it's not a guideline application decision, I don't have to leave it in place. Or did he think, well, we've left it in place this far, I should take it off the top? Is he going to rebuild the guidelines from the bottom up and then not know what to do with the one? He can't put the one, take the 1 point off. Or is he going to do the 35 minus 33? We just don't know. And the 1B1.10 wasn't that clear at the time.
Ms. Ray, I want to hear your response to the point that the government makes that the correct calculation was 151 to 188. The guy was sentenced to 188, so that's a third possibility of a 37-month reduction. But you think the judge may have made a mistake and put it at 168 to whatever it was, 210. 168 minus 188 is a 20-month reduction. So the government says, hey, wait a minute. The best you can do is to say to the judge, you made a mistake and you thought you could only reduce the sentence for 20 months, but the fact is you could have reduced it for 37 months. Therefore, reconsider your decision that you didn't want to reduce it at all. What sense is that?
Well, I think it makes a lot of sense because he didn't want to reduce it at all. He didn't want to reduce it 20 months. We're not saying he would reduce it 37 months. We're saying he would reduce it some part of 37 months. Not,
but if he was following your reasoning or the possibility of a mistake, then he would have reduced it 1 month, 2 months, three. He had 20 months. He had a 20-month opportunity to reduce it, and he didn't. And he reduced it zero. So if he has a 37-month opportunity to reduce it, what are the chances that he's going to reduce it to zero, to anything?
17 months more, because that means the guideline range that he has been sentenced under is that much more wrong, that much more representing an
unlawful. The same percentage of zero is zero. I mean, he didn't reduce it any. And he had the opportunity to reduce it 20 months under the what you see is the erroneous view. He had the opportunity to reduce it to 37 months under the other view. But he did it zero under whatever view he had. So
he didn't,
why does it make any sense to think he would
whichever have, way. He could have said that. He could have said, I'm not going to resolve this dispute, and either way I'm not giving it to you. He didn't say that. If he had said that, we wouldn't have this argument. But
yeah, you would.
No, I don't think so. I think I'd be out of
time. I have one more question for you. We have since, I guess, the mid-90s, a rule exemplified by the Pinnock case that when the, was it 3553 factors, when there's an appeal and the argument is the judge didn't, there's no indication that the judge went through each one of the factors under 3553. What we have said is that, look, you cannot mount an argument on appeal unless if the judge didn't put on the record how he or she evaluated his factors, unless what you have done after that occurred is filed a motion or made an objection and said, Your Honor, will you please set out your evaluation of the factors, right? That's the rule under 3553. So my question is, why shouldn't we have the same kind of rule under this section? That if you've got a problem with the judge not putting on the record the calculation for the applicable guideline range, then it was incumbent upon you as the defendant or defense attorney to file a paper saying, please set out your calculation. And rather than simply coming up here and we go through all this guesswork now and to send it back to the judge to do that, why shouldn't we have the Pinnock rule apply here?
The Pinnock rule, first of all, started out being, and I distinguished it in my brief, being for in guideline range sentences where the thing wasn't even appealable unless it was for a certain reason, and the court put the burden on the defendant to get that reason on the record.
Yeah.
Here, first of all, this is different because this is calculating the guideline range. The court's never said, we're going to, you know, it's your job to make the court say what the guideline range is, and if you don't, then we're going to assume it was what we think is right. Also, you know, it's different when you're...
Well, what we've got here, what we have here is a Dillon interpretation of the two-step process, and you're taking that to mean it's a step beyond Dillon. It's not that Dillon doesn't say the judge has to do this on the record. What you're saying is the judge has to do it on the record. Dillon doesn't say that. Dillon says there's a two-step. First, you do the calculation of the guideline range, and then you figure out whether you want to reduce it. But there's nothing in Dillon that says it has to be on the record. And what you're arguing is it's got to be on the record. And what I'm suggesting to you is that when we've heard that argument with respect to other factors, we've said, fine, you make the motion. If you don't make the motion, you're not going to come up here, and we're not going to allow you to make the argument that the judge failed to do the proper calculations.
Well, in Lawson, I don't know that's an example where I don't believe there was some post objection saying, you know, I asked for guideline range X and you did, you know, and the other one wanted Y and you didn't resolve it. I don't know if someone stood up and said, you need to resolve this. But in this case, since it's on the papers, I'm not even sure the procedure.
Well, that's a difference. And some circuits, I understand, have focused on that this was not orally.
Right.
But the only difference that makes is that the attorney, if it's done in open court, the attorney can immediately stand up and say, please set forth your considerations, but if it's done on the paper, you get the memorandum opinion, and you just file a motion. It's not a motion for reconsideration; it's a motion for clarification. You know, please set out what guideline range you determine?
It's hard for me to imagine then how that would affect the notice of appeal and the court's jurisdiction over that and all that.
Well,
I mean, frankly, it's awkward enough as the court literally is giving the sentence and leaving the bench to try to stop and say, you know, but to after the court's issued its memorandum to file something.
Well, then it's easier if you just file a piece of paper.
You don't have to do it in front of them, I suppose. But I did just want to make the point that on the 20 versus the 37, the difference is that the 37-month difference means his current range is more wrong. And what the judge found was that the public safety concerns outweighed a 20-month change entirely, but it might not have outweighed entirely a 37-month reduction. And I want to mention one thing about the infractions, because the government says...
The opposite.
I hope I was clear in my reply and explaining that.
Oh, I'm not going to reduce it by 20 because the danger to society is greater than the, you know, whatever. But if it's 37 months, well.
No, but what if it turned out, what if his range had been reduced to, say, 35 months, and it turned out he'd already overserved his correct range by like 100 months? I don't think we can read this opinion as saying I wouldn't give you any more reduction. But on the infraction point, I think there is something in the record I wanted to point the court to that I didn't get to do.
You do it quickly.
I am.
Pages
125 and 126 of the record do show that at that point where the infractions begin, there's an inmate remark that inmate stated he was never going back out to the compound and that's the point at which the infractions began, which does support defense counsel's argument that they were intentionally designed to protect him and get him administered.
We have that argument in the record, it's not frivolous by any means that he was committing the infractions in order to keep himself out of the
circulation. And therefore, the public safety concerns weren't so overwhelming as they might otherwise appear and might not outweigh the 37-month reduction.
Okay.
Thank you,
counsel. Hear from the government.
Good morning. Elizabeth Dinello for the United States. There was no confusion in the mind of the district court. The court knew that it had to determine the amended guideline range. It said so in its written order at page 157 of the appendix. And the court also knew what that amended guideline range was. Judge Williams, to follow up on your citation to the order, let me just make four brief points. First, the court knew what the unamended guideline range and offense level had been. At page 156 of the appendix, it states that appellant had been resentenced at level 35 with a guideline range of 188 to 235 months. Point two, the court was aware that it could reduce that offense level by two levels. It stated that in Amendment 206, the commission had amended the guidelines to provide for a two-level reduction in base offense levels for crack cocaine offenses. That's at page 156, and the court goes on to note that the parties agreed that Amendment 706 applied. Furthermore, the court believed that it only could change the sentence by those two levels. At page 158 of the appendix, the court states, all original sentencing determinations are to remain unchanged, with only the amended guideline range substituted for the unamended guideline range used at sentencing. In other words, the court understood that all it could do was start with level 35 and amend by two levels. Three, the math was easy. 35 minus 2 is 33. And four, the court knew that for this defendant with his criminal history category of 2, level 33 meant a guideline range of 151 to 188 months, which is what applied at the original sentencing. That's at pages 155 to 156 of the appendix. So the court's order as a whole shows that the court knew exactly what the amended range was. Now, the government did not dispute appellant's calculation that the amended range was 151 to 188 months. The government agreed with appellant about the procedural history of the case, including the fact that he had been resentenced at level 35. The government did not oppose the application of Amendment 706. It agreed that it applied. And moreover, the government argued that all the court could do would be to give the two-level reduction. The government argued in some detail that the court could not retool the whole
sentence.
The government
opposed any reduction of sentence.
The government opposed any reduction of sentence, but
it wouldn't have mattered whether you could reduce the sentence to one day, 2 years, 150 months, nothing. I mean, none of that would, your argument would have been exactly the same regardless of what the guideline range was.
But our point was that the...
As long as it was within the guideline range.
Right, but our point was that the government, or the government's position was that the court could not revise the original sentence. We implicitly acknowledged that the court couldn't correct the earlier error, which we had agreed to maintain at the resentencing. Interestingly, appellant filed a reply to the government's opposition challenging our argument about the fact that no reduction would be appropriate, but appellant did not seek to clarify what the amended range was. In other words, appellant did not see any confusion in the government's opposition about that amended range. Moreover, the court, in its opinion, its order, as I've noted, understood that the resentencing level was 35, and all it could do would be to reduce by two levels.
What's the timing of these misstatements by the probation department?
One was before appellant filed his 3582 motion, and then one was afterwards. Now, notably, those...
The one that was after, where was that in relation to various positions taken by the government and the defendant?
If appellant's appendix is in chronological order, it was the second memorandum was October 30th, 2009. It looks like appellant's reply was actually filed February 22nd, 2011. So the second memorandum was filed well before appellant filed his reply. But with regard to the probation office memoranda, it's significant that the district court did not rely on or even mention those memoranda in its written order. There's no doubt that the probation office was all over the map in terms of offense levels and guideline ranges, but the district court said correctly that appellant had been resentenced at level 35 and that at level 33 the guideline range would be 151 to 188 months. So regardless of the muddle over at the probation office, the district court understood what had happened and understood the options that were available to it. And unless the court has any further questions, the government would submit that the district court did not err and that its discretionary decision not to reduce sentence should be upheld.
Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you.
Okay, now we were over your time, but we'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal. That's right.
I want to correct. I think the probation's second memorandum was October 09. That was 6 months after we filed our reply brief in April 09. And it is after the reply in the appendix. And as far as why, I don't think there's any inference to be drawn from the fact that defendant's reply didn't say anything about the government's silence, because to the extent it appears the government is saying the correct range and really asking the court to apply an incorrect amended range on a 3582 is a rather extraordinary position. It turns out under Dillon it's correct, but at the time it would not have seemed obvious. I mean, silence from our perspective would be better than having, you know, sort of goading them into saying 168. So I don't interpret anything from that. And just finally, you know, probation is the neutral expert here, and it thought that 1B1.10 only gave authority to go down 20 months. And I want to say that to the extent there is a presumption that we need to rebut, which we don't believe there is, the Mooling case is distinguishable, where the presumption was not overcome by the advocate's, by an advocate's argument to the contrary, an incorrect argument. In that case, the government was saying you couldn't give a downward, you couldn't vary downward for crack powder disparity. And after Kimbrough, it turned out they were wrong, and the court said, you know, we're going to assume the district court understood it. But it's different when an arm of the court, the neutral expert, is telling the court that the range is 168. And we would ask the court to remand so the court can consider it with the proper range of 151 to 188.
I am right in thinking that the district court's order does not have a phrase, a word, reflecting any idea that the 34 would be the correct range.
The court keeps
what
that.
What level?
Right. The court does not say. And under Lawson and Ventura and those cases, we think this court can't review that sort of thing unless the district court tells the court what the guideline range is. And that's really different than an in-range sentence, and the court doesn't give the reasons for not going outside it.
I'll go back to just this point that, you know, under your theory, well, not under your theory, the correct view is that under the guidelines, Judge Lamberth could have reduced it to 37 months, and you think that, you know, he may have acted on the basis he could only reduce it by 20. But I just noticed something. In your motion to reduce sentence, you asked for a reduction of 42 months.
That's right, because we were arguing at that point that Booker applied on 3582, so defense counsel then was asking not
so
just...
So he rejected your motion to reduce it by 42 months, and now your argument is that if he had only known he could reduce it by 30, that might have changed his mind. How can that possibly
be? Well, I'm not positive of the timing, but I believe that that Booker argument had already been rejected by the Supreme Court by the time Judge Lamberth made his ruling. But even if not, the judge might have felt he's not going to apply Booker, so therefore he's limited to the 20. We don't know that he accepted defense counsel's view, which was ultimately proved to be incorrect, that the bottom of the range was soft and could be gone below.
It remains that the motion that he rejected was a motion to reduce it by 42 months.
She was asking for time served, but right. He may have thought he didn't have authority, and it turns out he didn't have authority to go below the bottom of the range.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted. Call the next.